sights to show you.
I don't know what happened, but like the past week or so, I have been like, this movie, this movie, this movie.
I know, you've been on a fucking roll. Like Nightmare Alley and everything.
Yeah, Nightmare Alley, Dune. I just watched Dune, and then Licorice Pizza. It is very racist.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there's like a scene where I'm like, what are you thinking, Mr. Anderson? What the fuck?
Is it like a portrayal of a racist moment, or like it is innately racist in its message?
It is a portrayal of a racist moment, and I think he's trying to like provide commentary.
Yes.
It just doesn't land the way I think he thought it was going to.
Oh, I see.
Like, I think he was just like, we're making fun of racists in the 70s. But the way it lands, I'm like, what?
You're like, hold on a second, buddy. That's a lot of... That's
what?
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
So I'm curious for you to see it.
Yes.
I'm curious on your thoughts, especially because I know how much you love him.
Yes, sure. I do love Paul Thomas Anderson. Despite, I guess, weird racist moments in this movie.
I mean, yeah.
But if there's a movie that is a little more activist than I would say a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, it might be Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, you think?
Oh, what a gay movie.
Oh, so gay.
What a gay movie. I can't tell you how many times my jaw just dropped watching this movie. I'm like, wow, that's pretty homoerotic, guys.
I mean, just like the pants drop to show that man is. Mm. Like, just there's plenty of times
first
in this movie.
First 15 minutes, baby. This is a really good gin and tonic.
This is such a good gin and tonic. Thank you so much. I mean, that Roku gin is fucking amazing.
No, the Roku gin's really good, but it's like fresh lime.
Yeah, good ratio. Good ratio. Yeah,
thank you. I have it down to a science with these glasses. Like, it's good. Like, making my own gin and tonics has been, like...
Oh, it's nice.
It's a nice, like, it makes me feel adulty, but also, like, having one at night doesn't quite make me feel like an alcoholic.
That's, you know what you gotta get then? There's a couple other gins that I'll link you to that are just for, like, Hendrix.
I love Hendrix.
Hendrix is the best.
Hendrix gin and tonics are delightful.
And they got a summer version that is insane.
Oh, the summer, yeah.
Yeah, you don't put lime, you put, like, orange, and instead of tonic, it's elderflower. So you mix that with the summer version.
Ooh.
That's right.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That sounds delightful.
Oh, we'll find out in a couple months for sure.
Mm. Mm-hmm-hmm. Anyway, let's talk about this movie.
Yes, let's go. Let's go. Let's do it. As we split these fine drinks. And...
Yes, yes, yes. So welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Oh, we're G&Ts today. This is going to be great.
It's been a while. Actually, we've never actually recorded while drinking a G&T. We've recorded after, but never during. And I feel like that's a difference.
I feel like because this movie is so gay, we needed to have a drink that started with a G. Like, it just needed to make sense. Yeah.
Sure. That's weird. Okay.
There's a reasoning behind it, yes.
Your weird gay logic, sure.
Weird gay logic, the outline. Mm-hmm. We'll find out right now.
Right. But,
yes, we're covering a Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. So we're coming back to Krueger, except this time, instead of focusing on Wes Craven and his whole, like, return to stardom and that whole thing we did with the first Nightmare film, this is a very, very different movie.
Absolutely.
It's, like, way different. And it tells an interesting story. So, but the IMDb obviously doesn't know how to make these stories interesting. Because it says, a teenage boy is haunted in his dreams by deceased child murderer Freddy Krueger, who is out to possess him in order to continue his reign of terror in the real world. Says nothing about any of the homoerotic subtext in here.
I mean, to be fair, what were you expecting? Like... Queer teenage boy is haunted in his dreams by deceased child murderer Freddy Krueger, who also is gay. Like, what were you like?
It's IMDb. We'll just say queer, period. That's it. That's all it would be.
And it's just gay with, like, 12 A's in
yes.
the A.
And two Y's and exclamation point. Yes. Exactly that, yes.
Gay!
So, this was written by David Chaskin and directed by Jack Scholder, who are going to be interesting figures in this outline. It stars... Mark Patton, Kim Myers, Robert Russler, Clue Gulager. Okay.
Gulager.
Gulager. Oh, this. Joe, boy, that could be pretty bad. Hope Lang, and of course, Robert Englund.
So, ah, yes.
The man. This was budgeted pretty high at $3 million.
Whopping $3 million.
Whopping $3 million. And, of course, it released on November 1st, 1985, a day after Halloween, which was stupid. But it made $30 million, so it's still pretty good for the company.
Absolutely.
Oh, now, we got ourselves a story to tell, because this, obviously, the way this movie came out, as gay as it was, there's a big reasoning behind it, so... Alex, kick us off.
I haven't read any of this, so bear with me. Mm. So, Mark Patton describes himself as a hypersensitive boy growing up in Riverside, Missouri, a town where he stood out as he was generally considered prettier than normal by his own admission, which garnered the attention of a lot of bullies.
He didn't have the Missouri jaw. You know?
Yeah, he didn't have that robust,
No. And the gangly
farmer,
hair.
Yeah,
no.
He didn't have the farmer look.
Oh, you look like a city boy.
You look like one of them there city boys. This was in the late 70s, so we can assume the bullies were of the old school variety, but Mark did find a way to escape via acting, as many are, you know, want to do.
Yes, that's true. It's like, I would rather just sell the punches instead of taking them legitimately.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, during this journey, Mark began to develop much more self-consequence.
Not yet.
Self-confidence, thanks to some reassurance from his father, and Mark found himself attracted to other men, using this confidence to embrace this rather than reject it, although it definitely wasn't easy.
Yeah, from what he describes, he was getting bullied and, like, really, really down on himself, but he had a very supportive father.
That's great.
Yeah.
In the 70s? Are you serious?
Right? And he said some piece of advice that I didn't put in here, but it was really profound. And then Mark was like, you know what? Yeah, I am going to be my own goddamn man. Fuck this. And then he's
sweet.
And you
love
know what?
That.
I am different. I like that guy.
And I like him. On this, he says, quote, "Once I figured out I was gay, I always acted on it, but I was always afraid some redneck would kill me on a back road. That's where I thought I would end up because that's where I come from. Theater provided me a safe space," unquote. That's awful.
I mean, you gotta remember, this is Missouri in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's sorry, Missouri. I have family in Missouri. I've been there before.
My dad's from Missouri.
Exactly. We know what we're talking about here. It was
actually,
much
my
worse.
My dad was in Missouri in the 70s.
Oh,
so.
My gosh. So he knows.
And he was a dork.
Oh, boy. How does he describe Missouri in the 70s as a dork?
Not great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely not. No.
Not great. So after high school graduation, he bought a plane ticket to New York for $132 in late 70s money, leaving behind his oppressive hometown and pursuing the only thing that gave him a respite from it.
Oh, look at him following his dreams.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "When I got off the plane to New York, I breathed my first relaxed breath, probably in my entire life, because I realized I was safe," unquote.
The way in his interviews he describes New York is like with such like...
Affection. That's cute. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So Mark was achieving major success in New York City. He had booked a number of commercials and off-Broadway plays in just a few months and found home in the local gay community. He was embraced and after a few years landed a dream role that would change his life forever.
Man. I mean, he earned it after having to live in Missouri for the first 18 years of his life.
This is
70s Missouri.
Right? This is such like a... Hollywood, like...
we're in the first act, though, so yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, this is the first section. Where are we going from here?
Oh, keep going. Mm-hmm.
Mark was set to play Joe Qualley opposite Cher and Kathy Bates in the play Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean. What the fuck is that?
It's a real gay play.
Yeah, and Cher and Kathy Bates are in it. So anyway, and because he did so well in the role on stage, he was selected to be part of the film adaptation as well.
Yeah, he played a trans male in the movie, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "It was one of those moments where you knew it was your destiny," unquote, says Mark. He was set to make his big move to Los Angeles, leaving behind everything he'd built in New York for a shot at the big time. However, at this point, something would ravage the gay community and put even more stigma on Mark's sexual identity going forward, and I think we all know what it is.
Yep, yeah, we do, because this definitely changed, unfortunately, how people approach gay people in professional settings and everywhere, really.
To this day.
So on May 18th, 1981, a gay newspaper called the New York Native broke the story about this new, quote-unquote, exotic disease, making its way through the local community. Shortly after, the U.S. government would begin to clinically observe this new disease and signal the beginning of the 1980s AIDS epidemic, unfortunately.
Yeah, this was back when it wasn't HIV, it wasn't AIDS, it was when it was called GRID, which is gay-related immunity deficiency virus. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or something like that. But basically, it was very distinctly, like, This is a gay disease.
While being gay wasn't exactly openly embraced in the entertainment industry before this, things got much, much worse in Hollywood. So the open and free lifestyle that Mark was used to was no longer an option for him. And instead, his first manager did their best to make him appear as straight as possible. He wasn't even allowed to talk to a gay magazine about his character Joe Qualley. Producers thought he would slip up about his sexuality, and he thought that they were right about it. This just wasn't New York City anymore. Quote, "I wasn't allowed to step foot in West Hollywood because agents would post people in the LA gay bars so they could sabotage the career of any actor who competed with one of their clients. It was very cutthroat." And I picked that quote out of tons of other quotes he's talked about in this particular era of agents and Hollywood execs being vicious with their gay actors.
That's awful.
That's fucking horrifying. So,
wow. So there's, I actually think Mark Ruffalo's in it. There's a really great, I think it might be on HBO, it might not be anymore. But if you want to kind of see the how quickly the tide kind of changed, HIV kind of started making its way, I guess, through the gay community.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Normal Heart.
I've heard about this one before. Yeah.
It was a play.
Yeah.
And then it was a movie. Or I think it might have been a miniseries. I don't quite remember. But basically, I think, in my opinion, it does a very good job of showing how quickly, like, because, like, in, like, the party scene in the gay community, how quickly people were, like, wanting to change but also not wanting to change. And, like, how it was, like, we don't want to go back into the closet. But also, there's a lot of politics, and I could talk about this forever.
Oh, we're probably going to have a whole conversation.
This is what I got my degree in. So.
I know, right? Well, that's the thing. Like, this, because you're right. There was a lot of conflict within the communities from what I've read about this. That, and it was, people really didn't want to, like, stop because it was, it's what they knew.
Well, think about it. Like, you have finally, like, I mean, think about it from his perspective, or, like, our titular character.
Yes.
He had just come to terms with himself, and he was just living his life.
Yeah.
And he wasn't, you know what I mean?
And confident in his identity
and
as that person.
Confident in his identity. And suddenly basically being told to put himself back into the closet. And that's kind of what it felt like.
Oh, and pretend to be something he is not.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And in the case of, in the Normal Heart, Larry Kramer, who was he was an ACT UP activist.
Mm-hmm.
He was basically, he would be pretty much say, like, you guys need to stop having unprotected casual sex with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And people fought him on it. Like, he was pretty much widely hated for it because it was just like, who are you to tell us what we can and can't do? We are confident in ourselves. We want to do this. Like, basically, it became a, like, you're being homophobic when really it was a, I want you to live.
Yes.
It's insane.
There's
Larry Kramer's a very prominent issue, or not issue, but a very prominent character in the AIDS epidemic in the 80s.
Oh my gosh. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit more coming up too, because there's a lot with that whole thing, especially the 80s. Again, we've been hitting the 80s a lot this season. It's kind of crazy that, like, it has this facade of fun while a bunch of, like, crazy shit behind the scenes in the entire world was happening. Like, on every aspect of our life.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And Larry Kramer, I mean, the whole thing, it broke my heart because I actually, like, read a lot of his stuff, but he died in 2020.
Wow. During the pandemic?
Yeah.
Fucking A.
In May of 2020. Yeah. I remember when it happened, too, because I was just like, fuck.
That's a figure. Jeez. Well, It was at this point that Mark...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. We're going to keep getting down here, actually. So you know, Freddy's Revenge, yay. So Mark was forced to be in the closet in order to continue working in Hollywood, which was a struggle as the AIDS epidemic was, as we were talking about right now, tearing through the communities as the decade went on. Screenwriter David Chaskin found a way to acknowledge the gay community in a way he intended to be subtle, thanks to an opportunity he received to write a sequel to, of all movies, A Nightmare on Elm Street.
I'm sorry, this was supposed to be subtle?
Well, I think it was a little more subtle in the script, as we'll find out.
Okay.
But he wasn't ready to admit that he was alluding to this, seeing as he would also have been shunned by the entertainment industry for doing so. So he simply added the subtext to the script and pretended to not know any better. The script was greenlit after a version of Nightmare 2 was rejected, as it was a commentary on abortion. And New Line's very pregnant executive producer Sarah Risher was not a fan of that concept. Either way, Freddie was about to get oddly political in his second outing for some reason.
Wow.
It was abortion or gay rights, you know? That's it. That's all. Freddie's going to have to do something.
Two political stances.
Yeah, and the only one character that can really bring some attention to it was, for some reason, Freddy Krueger.
A later child molester. Yes. At this point, still just a child murderer.
Yeah, there you go. See?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Love this caption, by the way. It's called Subtext. Hello. Mark Patton knew right away Freddy's Revenge was a very, 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 capital V, very gay movie.
Capital V, capital E, capital R, capital Y, G-A-Y, even bigger capitals.
Underlined,
italicized.
But he also knew it was a sequel to a huge hit, and that it would likely be very successful. He thought it would be good for his career, so he signed on to play lead Jesse Walsh. Yeah, he read that script and he was just like, oh, come on. So
Mark, say a little stronger. Oh, come on.
Right. Come on. Alone in the Dark director Jack Sholder also saw it as a major opportunity despite not wanting to work in horror.
Typo.
So he signed on as well. He was supposedly ignorant to the gay subtext of the film. Supposedly.
Capital S supposedly, yeah.
Capital S supposedly.
Oh my God, yeah, I had no idea, guys. I had no idea. It was this gay.
I had no idea it was a gay bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I leaned on the man ass a little bit, but like that was just for the shot.
I just love high schoolers.
So let's turn it around. Let's go back to the gay thing. Jesus, that's good.
Jack may have been in a little over his head on this one, though, as he had very little time to prepare for the shoot since New Line wanted the film out as soon as possible. Thanks. Typical New Line.
Yeah, I was about to say, we've told that story before.
Listen to every episode we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
He also had a ton of special effects. He had to do a ton of special effects that he had never done before. So shooting began in April of 1985, and Mark noticed some major changes happening with the script, as well as some creative shooting choices. Something that very much acknowledged what he was trying to keep secret for the sake of his career.
Mm-hmm.
On this, Mark states, quote, "It just became undeniable. I mean, when you're looking at dailies and I'm lying in bed and I'm a Pieta?
Pieta, yeah.
Yeah, and the candles are dripping and they're bending like phalluses and white wax is dripping all over. And it's like I'm the center of a, what do they call it? A bukkake. I'm like a bukkake video," unquote. I've actually seen this quote. I love this. I love it. Chaskin denied that any of these changes intended to put a spotlight on the gay themes. Mark was livid, but realized not a lot of the crew actually knew what was going on, seeing as they were mostly, quote, dumb straight guys.
It's a direct quote. He was like, guys, are you kidding me? Like, do you see this? They're like, ah, dude, bro, it's fine. Like, that was, like, the mentality he was dealing with on set.
Again, just, I, and you know what? No hate, but truly the amount of times, like, subtext just goes over in general, en masse, straight men's heads. I'm like, wow.
As a straight man, sometimes I miss it too. But this one was hard to deny.
This one's a little like...
It's a little on the nose and every other part that, yes.
On the ass.
It's on the ass. It's very on the ass.
On the ass, in the mouth, like it's everywhere.
And in the nose.
Director Jack Sholder was so worried about getting the special effects done correctly that he supposedly completely overlooked the gay aspects of the script and didn't even know Mark's sexuality till near the end of producing.
Yeah, hold it on the ass for 5 seconds.
Focus on the ass.
Focus on the ass.
Zoom in on the ass.
Then cut to the face and back to the ass. And how are we going to get this, like, Freddy thing done? Okay, we'll get to that later. It's fine.
The only indication he got prior, according to the director himself, was that Mark wasn't very good at makeout scenes.
And when I read that quote, I didn't put the full quote in there, but it sounded like a real, just like, almost like gay bashing way of saying it. Like, well, I guess he wasn't very good at the makeout scenes, blah, blah, blah. It was from the 80s.
Okay, I don't know if we're going to get to it, if we're going to talk about the plot at all.
No, we're not doing a plot breakdown. There's too much on this one.
Okay, that's fine. So there's a scene in the movie where the intended love interest of the movie comes over, and the mom is just like, your friend came over. And there's a sign on the door that says, first of all, no chicks allowed, which, love that. Second of all, he's just like, oh, I'm just cleaning my room. And she's like, well, do you want some help? And if this was a straight movie, it would have cut to them making out.
Oh, yeah.
However, in this gay-ass movie, they actually clean his room.
Ugh.
And it shows them doing it. And my friend that I watched it with, we were both dying. We were both just like, they're cleaning. They're cleaning.
Mm.
Like, what, huh?
Yeah, just realize that sometimes a, you know, 17-year-old high school boy would rather have a clean room than sex in just a room.
Then make out?
Yeah.
Then touch a titty?
Then touch a titty. Oh, see, now when you say it like that, I'm sorry. I couldn't continue with the joke. I never pass up to touch a titty.
Exactly. It just, what the fuck? And this girl wants his dick.
Oh,
so bad.
The whole movie, she's just like...
The whole movie, she wants the dick.
She's like one scene away from just spread eagle, like, right when he opens his fucking front door, like,
yeah,
right there.
Literally just like, I don't know, covering herself in like whipped cream or whatever the fuck. And it's just,
yeah, pull a Varsity Blues with this guy. How's that? He's not James Van Der Beek.
And then the scene where they are making out, I'm just like, I'm just like, oh my god, oh my god, this is awful. This is like, you're gay.
This is pretty gay.
Even the straight makeout scene is gay. Like, this is ridiculous. Oh my god.
So
the Mark wasn't very good at makeout scenes. I know this is gay bashy and kind of homophobic, but it's kind of true.
I mean, he did have to shoot it. He's like, fuck, this is the best take we're going to get. Okay, let's go.
Sholder later acknowledged the queer aspects of the script, saying, quote, I mean, clearly there's a gay S&M bar and the ass-whipping scene and all the other stuff and some of the lines that people have picked up on, like, he's inside me. I honestly never got to that level of subtext with it. Shut the fuck up.
He's fucking lying.
Shut the fuck up.
He's so lying.
Like,
imagine
making that list of being like, well, yeah, there's a gay S&M bar and, yeah, this guy is chained up spread eagle and has his ass whipped with a towel and yeah, all the other stuff. And yeah, there's a line where Freddy says how much he wants to be inside of him, and there's a line where the main character says he's inside me, but I never picked up on it. You're a fucking liar. You are a fucking liar.
He had to direct that line delivery. Like, that's where you kind of throw it off, because it's just like, you could have made it sound a little straighter.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Also, I love that their version of a gay S&M bar just really looked like an alternative, like, dive bar.
It did, right? It just seemed like I've been to that bar.
Like, I've exactly. Like, I was.
Then again, it could have been like a 70s or 80s version of that. I don't know how different it was.
Well, I think it was a small town.
Oh, that's a good point.
I think
too.
It's a small town gay bar where it's just like there isn't like the gay bar and the lesbian bar. They have to, like combine forces.
Yeah, why is there only one bathroom? What's going on?
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so.
Oh, boy.
That's why I was. Yeah.
This movie. Oh, we're going to get into how gay this movie really is. Don't worry. We're going to break it down a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, don't we got that.
Despite the quick turnaround and discomfort from Mark, alongside Chaskin's coy attitude towards the subject matter, we also almost didn't get Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, which would have been awful.
Oh, yeah.
The team experimented with a mask on a stunt double, but Robert Englund's acting was just too dynamic for a regular stunt double to emulate. Thank Christ.
So they actually shot a few scenes with this stunt double in the Freddy mask, and they're just, everybody, when they saw those dailies the first time, they're like, dude, he can't move. They're like, no matter what direction we give him, like, he somehow is not capturing Freddy. And then once they, read on, please.
Robert Englund's Freddy.
He is.
The actor was denied his return to Freddy as he wanted more money, apparently. But New Line quickly realized they had to pay up if they wanted their antagonist to be scary.
I mean,
and rightfully so. Robert Englund has been cashing this check for years. Yeah, and
but no one else can play it.
No.
Like, his movement is just fucking something else. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
Even if he's, like, the gayest Freddy.
Yeah, he's the gayest pushes Freddy. Him against the wall and takes his, like, little knife it's hands like, and is just like, I'm gonna caress your face.
It's like Freddy Bear's here.
Stop it! No! I don't like that voice coming out of you.
Anyway. So, when Freddy's Revenge finally made its way to theaters on November 1st, 1985, its critical reception can be best described as mixed. Like, pretty goddamn mixed. We'll save you the reviews, because there are very few that have actually been available to this date. But critics, from what's been said, generally were concerned with just how not scary Freddy's Revenge was compared to its predecessor. Hell, even the original director, Wes Craven, he just was not a fan, and he described the film as silly in its best moments. So he was shitting on this one.
Silly is a way to call it, sure.
Yeah, yeah, very, very silly.
Silly.
So silly.
Silly. For those of you listening at home, because this is a audio medium, we're doing the hand gesture.
Yeah, we're definitely doing the
for
hand gesture.
For those who know. Yeah, if you know, you know.
Really. So, however, despite only peaking in second place and making less money than the first Freddy movie, the film was considered a box office success. Eventually, though, fans, and really quickly eventually, they started picking up on the gay subtext of the film, and it wasn't looking good for Mark Patton, whose performance was highlighted and who was now the target of the media, all while AIDS was making its way through America and with some very negative media coverage.
Okay, gotta say, though, like, if you're gonna make this kid wake up in, like, a bath of his own sweat and, like, while I was watching this movie, like, my friend was like, if I have to keep seeing this kid's nipples, I'm gonna lose it.
Well, I mean, that's not what Mark signed up for, really, though. He thought it was gonna be, like, as the script was, but when you take direction and, like, everything else in it, got a lot gayer.
Yeah.
Got a lot of gear. So the bad news kept piling on, states Mark, which is a very, very sad quote. Quote, by that point, AIDS was all around me. Everyone I knew was getting sick, end quote. So it was in this environment that screenwriter David Chaskin would blame Mark's performance for the gay subtext of the film, putting all the pressure on the actor who was trying to remain in the closet for the sake of his career. Hollywood was still very much homophobic in the 1980s, and things were only getting worse as the Reagan administration did their best to dismiss the impact of the disease for a very long time. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, have you ever seen the press conferences about this?
Yes.
They're fucking... They make me so mad. Yeah. Like, when I've watched them, I get pissed.
Dude.
Like, it's straight up just gay bashing, like...
Yeah.
Oh, I know you... Yeah, you definitely have. I'm like, why even ask that question?
Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something... And this is happening around the same time as this. It's despicable. Again, fuck Ronald Reagan. So... get back to this.
We can't say that enough on this podcast.
Yeah.
Fuck Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely. So, as years passed, Mark received an opportunity to audition for a major gay character on a CBS pilot, something that would be huge for his career and the community that he loved. But this community was getting hit hard in Hollywood, and Mark was still being pressured to stay in the closet despite the role being considered groundbreaking for the community. During one of these conversations, Mark himself had a revelation. Quote, Hollywood looked like a ghost town. You'd see people, and 3 months later, they would be dead, Patton said. I thought, my God, half the world is fucking dying, and these people are sitting here having this conversation? I didn't get into acting for this. End quote. So Mark left Hollywood shortly after this whole pilot debacle, moving to New York once more to establish himself as a successful, very successful interior decorator, and eventually finding himself once again in Florida to continue his career in this path.
So, oh, that's cool.
He found his way out. David Chaskin only had a few more screenplays before his career dropped off pretty bad, and Jack Sholder ended up working on TV movies and direct-to-video movies. Fraser Revenge didn't seem to work for anyone on the creative staff, unfortunately.
Yeah, but also, like, screw you for not standing by your creative vision and not defending your freaking actors.
Not just not defending and putting all the pressure on
them. Yeah, like throwing him under the fucking
bus. Throwing him under the bus. Yeah, and there's actually a lot more mean quotes from Mark that I didn't put in here, but he goes hard on David Chaskin. He's been going on him for decades. And deservedly so.
That's fucking awful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a suck.
Okay. So, in the late 90s, Mark Patton was admitted to the hospital after suffering what he thought was a bad bout of bronchitis. After a variety of tests, Mark was confirmed HIV positive and in poor health due to tuberculosis and a number of other infections. He nearly died in the hospital shortly after his 40th birthday.
Yeah, this was a pretty life-changing moment for him, obviously.
I can imagine. Mm. However, Mark did recover and managed to find love and move to Mexico, living the best years of his life.
He self-described like he loved this part of his life.
That's awesome. He did his best to live off the grid, but there was a Freddy Krueger documentary being made, and it turns out Mark is a very important part of that legacy, which, you know, it's the sequel. It is, I mean, you know, this movie, regardless of your thoughts on it, it is the direct sequel to the first movie.
Well, I mean, again, also its reputation, which we're going to get into right now. But Mark, at this time, is just in Mexico, off the grid, not even worrying about American media. Like, he doesn't know about his impact in horror at all.
Yeah. After what he went through, I do not fucking blame him.
Oh, absolutely.
So the filmmakers tracked him down and let him know that he was now seen as a hero in the gay community for his bold performance in the film. The thing that had once kept him down had opened him up to even more opportunities. In his documentary, Never Sleep Again, great documentary.
Very good.
David Chaskin finally admitted that he had intentionally put gay subtext into the film, vindicating Mark Patton, though the actor does not believe the gesture to be sincere.
Yeah, from his quotes, he kind of goes back and forth to forgiving him, being like, well, he only did it because, like, his back was against the wall and the tide turned, and now he's fucking talking about it like he's an innovator.
I mean, yeah, the tide changed significantly, especially within the last, 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Chaskin did it to protect his career where he only had like two or three more scripts.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So. Still, Mark managed to hit the horror circuit scene and make an even bigger name for himself in the horror community. Alas, embracing his biggest claim to fame. He even released a documentary on his experience and has been labeled the first male Scream Queen.
I say Scream King, but you know, that's how all the docs say it, so I'm like, fine.
Yeah, because they're just like, get it? Because he's gay?
Yeah. Scream King, goddammit!
Quote, I didn't think I was famous. I just thought I was a has-been and a failure, Patton said. Oh, quote, I didn't realize I was considered iconic, unquote.
Yeah, so he had the best years of his life in Mexico, and then he learned that he's a fucking legend.
That's awesome.
Right?
Aw, okay. Seeing as how things have changed in retrospect for Mark and Freddy's Revenge, we think now's a good time to see what the current recognition and reception is for Nightmare 2. On Letterboxd, Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Freddy's Revenge has a 2.8 rating out of 11,000 reviews. Oof.
Yeah, it's above average.
Barely. Amaya gives the film 4 out of 5 stars, saying, quote, why do straight people think this is homophobic? Let us enjoy our funky gay horror movie. I just want to see Freddy Krueger do his silly little murders.
Silly little murders.
Freddy Krueger. Freddy Krueger. Chris Fail?
Yeah.
Gives the film 3.5 stars, saying, quote, being gay is about being this sweaty all the time, unquote. Truly, he was so sweaty.
Oh, yeah.
He was so sweaty. Will Sloan gives the film 3 stars, saying, quote, the director claims he didn't know how, unquote.
Yes. I mean, we talked about his quotes. There's plenty more quotes. They're all just as dumb. They're just as dumb.
And not, yeah, stupid for him to even try it. Laurie Schrode, wow, gives the film 3.5 stars, saying, quote, a sequel worthy of praise. Mark Patton makes for an incredible scream queen and gives an emotionally wrenching performance. The Freddy gags are imaginative as usual, especially the line, you have a body, I have the brains, and rips his scalp to reveal a throbbing brain. Pretty sick. It's not perfect like the first film, obviously, and Freddy seems to be out of the picture for large portions, but England's performance is nothing short of spectacular, unquote.
Hmm.
And finally, David D. gives the film 4 stars, saying, gay, unquote.
You know, the dichotomy is good on that one.
There was a good back and forth between Laurie Strode and David D.
Yeah, a little difference in insight, but I think both valid.
Both equally astute.
Yes, I agree. So, now that we spent a lot of this episode, regarding how the subtext of the film affected its production, and the history behind, with the backdrop, of course, the AIDS crisis. And once again, I'm going to say this, as I like to say it often, fuck Ronald Reagan.
Absolutely.
But what is the subtext that we're talking about, and what makes it a cult classic with the gay community? Well, we're here to break it down. So, there's a couple things that a lot of academics have actually pointed out that I want to kind of, like, run through. And
is this Anthony's Theory Corner?
Kinda. I'm actually going to present these and run by you, because you're the expert here. So, this is my, like, hot potato. But
I'm going to check. Can you check my work?
Yeah, please. Academics said this, Alex. But so one of the concepts that is in the forefront here is Jesse as the final girl. So main character Jesse is given a gender neutral name. And one of the first screams in the movie actually is from Jesse himself.
A very effeminate scream, might I add.
Very, very much. He is given all the tropes of the final girl, though him being a male flies obviously in the face of this convention, including him rarely being fully clothed. Oh, and then the dance scene with all the candles. So how do you feel about the validity of this particular sentiment when it comes to him being a male scream queen?
I think so. I think especially for this movie, there is a moment at 2/3 of the way through the movie where when Freddy Krueger kind of takes over.
Yeah.
And the, what's her face? What's her name?
Kim
Myers.
Yeah, Kim Myers.
Kind of takes over as the hero.
Mm-hmm. And where she's kind of like not the final girl, but like the love interest, where the male usually would do some kind of more assertive thing.
Yeah, but the way that the movie is shot and the way that it kind of sets it up where I'm just like, I thought Jesse was going to die. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I really thought Jesse was going to die. Mm-hmm. But I do agree. The love interest very much has the love interest role of, like, I need to save the girl.
Yes, I need to protect Jesse.
I need to protect Jesse. And even though everyone is just like, he's gone or whatever. And and she does what she can. She does what she can to save him. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, Jesse's the final girl, so to speak. And he lives, so.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
except for that weird-ass ending.
I mean, that's just one of those Freddy stingers.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's just like, hello, my heterosexual girlfriend. I'm going to sit down and kiss you because I'm a heterosexual.
Oh, no, no, where are we going?
Yeah. Stop the bus! Jesus Christ, Jesse.
Oh, that scream. Anyway.
But also, like, yeah, similar deal, the gender neutral name. Like,
yeah.
That is very, I mean, anyone who's, done any reading on horror and Final Girls knows that the gender neutral name is pretty much a done deal.
Oh, yeah, wow, absolutely. So now here's another one that a lot of academics latch onto. So it's Jesse struggling with his sexuality. Storyline of the movie alludes to Jesse struggling with his own sexuality, with Freddy as a manifestation of this struggle. Notably, Jesse may have two love interests in Lisa Weber, rich girl next door who, you know, everyone admires, and Ron Grady, rival turned best friend who Jesse is very vulnerable with. Freddie's desire to take over Jesse's body has been seen as representative of Jesse's true urges, and how his repression of them results in terror for those closest to the protagonist.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of 100%, I would say.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, the whole Grady storyline, to me is, like, that's probably the gayest part of the movie for me.
Okay, yes. So, okay, my friend that I watched it with, we were watching it, and he was like, so you're telling me he's best friends with the guy who pantsed him in gym class?
Yeah, and who they were talking shit and, like, not having fun, but they have one conversation. He's like, I'm just wasting time, bro. Let's just fucking do it.
Yeah, and now they're best friends, and then finally he shows up. And, okay, the scene where he shows up at his house.
Yeah, after leaving the party, right?
After leaving the party.
Leaving the girl
who he was definitely gonna get his dick wet.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, sitting on the couch. And he's like, you can't let me fall asleep. And the way he's sitting definitely looks like he's about to start jerking it.
I didn't think about that framing aspect of it.
Like, the way he's sitting, like, he's, like, leaning back, like, his legs are... I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? And
it's like open for business.
Yeah. And Grady's just like, whatever, dude. Like, and it's, I'm like, what? 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 What?
I mean, and these dudes are in the locker room together a lot. They're sweating together a lot.
It's very homoerotic.
There's such a, that, and I feel like you can even tell Jesse's energy with Grady is very comparably different than what he is with Lisa.
Yes.
Like, very, very significantly
agreed.
Different. Yeah.
I think that the, there is this term in gender and sexuality studies, which is my major.
Ah.
I have a degree in this, which does, I guess, technically make me the most qualified thing I could speak on. It's called it's homosocial.
Homosocial, okay.
So basically, like firemen, sports teams, it is a social group that is comprised of the same gender.
Yes.
This is case in point, a homosocial,
this is a homosocial, like, arrangement right
here. Yes, it's usually, like, a larger group, but, like, in this case, it's just, like, they're both on the same, like, teams or whatever, and, like, and it's just, and, like, that's where, like, you know, slap ass comes from, where it's, like, it's okay, it's not gay, it's because we're all... buddies.
Yeah, and you know, we teabagged them when they were sleeping because, like, that's a prank, bro. It's just a prank.
Exactly.
Like, balls weren't on another dude's face for, like, pleasure at all. Like, that's not why it happened. No.
Yeah, exactly. so, yes, I definitely can see this. I just have to say it, but it also goes to the... because it sets it up as this struggle between picking a side.
Yes. It definitely presented that way.
By presenting it that way, it also sets it up for those watching, if they choose to read it that way, that you can only be straight or you can only be gay.
It's a binary choice.
Yeah. Then there's no in between.
Well, that's...
Which, as we know, I hate choosing. I'm a bit of a slut that way.
I mean, you're bi a lot of things, but lingual's not one of them.
Correct.
I mean, I'm also going to touch on a little bit of Freddy being a manifestation of this. Obviously, as the movie goes along and he's kind of parlaying between these two things, Freddy is making himself present throughout the movie and committing murders and, you know, doing his thing. But the thing that always gets me is that when Grady gets killed by Freddy, Jesse's reaction is a lot more emotional, but not in a screamy kind of, like, stereotypical way.
Hurt. Yeah, he's, like, staring into space. Like, he is... fucked up. And he's, like, covered in blood.
Yeah. And it's that part of him that he chose to go the straight way, I feel like. And that's when the Freddy part comes out of the aggression of making that kind of choice. Yeah.
And I think that from here, in my opinion, other than the party scene where Jesse and Lisa kiss.
Yeah.
Before that, and then after... Grady dies. Lisa feels like a friend.
She does.
She feels like a quirky sidekick.
She really, really does. Like that makes all of their affection kind of almost disingenuous.
It feels very not, like, I felt nothing. Like, when I was just, like, not invested in their relationship. I was like, where is this coming from? Especially when she was just like, I love you. Like, what? You cleaned his room, bitch.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
I love Grady.
Other than, like, she obviously, like, wanted the dick, but, like, yeah. he was not reciprocating. Like, there was no, like, chemistry. There was no chemistry. Which, I mean, for, like, as an actor who was, like, struggling with, like, the politics and the obvious subtext of the movie.
Yeah, he's clearly going through something while it's happening.
Right, so I feel like it probably makes it hard to focus on your job.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and again, to be that role that he doesn't want to be typecast, and unfortunately this definitely put him in that box,
yeah.
for sure. But yeah, again, I feel like, again, from that very pivotal point of Grady's death, the movie does change. It very much changes. And that's his decision being kind of manifested right there.
Yeah.
So here's another one too. Framing of male nudity, which I touched on a little bit, but lots of man asses in this one. But the way it's shot in particular, and even scenes with obvious innuendo, again, the candles, the gay bar, everything, are shot in a way that is usually reserved for females in horror films, with long frame holds on male anatomy being center stage. So how do you feel about the way that this movie is shot regarding a lot of the subtext in the film?
Oof.
To me, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Like, you don't usually present dudes in this manner. Not in horror, at least.
Not necessarily. I think if he was, like, a beefcake?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
No, it would seem a little gayer if he was a beefcake?
No. I mean, like, I think in horror films, you definitely kind of get the, like...
If he was a beefcake, he would have been shot this way.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I'm not necessarily saying for, like, subtext or, like mm-hmm. this movie, like, I'm not saying you could put, I don't know, who's a beefy guy in the 80s. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah, just, like, put...
They'll do the ab shot, and they'll do something like that.
So yeah.
Like, oh, hey, lady, start screaming right now.
Or they'll do, like, the shower scene, and yeah. he just, like, shakes out his hair or whatever. Mm-hmm.
To me, that also, it comes off as an obvious camp factor, though, that I don't think is as obvious in this
movie. In this movie?
No, normally when they do those kind of
shots. Oh, I thought this movie was campy as hell.
I thought so, too, but again, in terms of when they frame, like, a guy doing it, it's very obvious, like, hey, ladies. Like, it's a Val Venus kind of fucking way of shooting it, where...
It's a very, like...
This is for you.
Romantic novel, kind Fabio, kind of.
Fabio, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, which this is not given that kind of context.
And maybe my perception of this is also kind of colored by my sexuality as well, mm-hmm. because it's also just like, even now, what is considered traditionally attractive, like the beefcakes of Hollywood today, I'm like, I... Like, Chris Evans, for example.
Yes.
America's ass. Does nothing for me.
Oh, okay.
Everyone's just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'm like, he seems like a nice guy. I'd let him hold my drink at a party.
That's right, yeah. You partner in beer pong together. Right.
We'd crush it. That's as far as it goes. But, you know, so, I mean, the campiness of the male nudity, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I like what they did with it. I don't think that was the problem.
No, I don't think so either, but I do feel like it is out of the ordinary compared to how this is traditionally portrayed, especially with the hero.
Sure.
In horror
films. With the hero, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. I think there's a lot of auxiliary characters in horror movies.
That get that treatment.
Like the ones who get murdered.
Yes, exactly.
Get that treatment.
They get the ab shot. They get the baby, like, you won't just fucking do it in a tent?
They get the ass shot. They get the ab shot. They get the shower scene. Mm-hmm. They get the... Yes. He got it all.
He got everything.
He got the ass shot. He got the shower scene. Given his very weird coach was getting murdered.
Yeah. Well, he also got the hero shots and he got the damsel shots. Like, and the damsel shot. So yeah, he got everything, really.
He got the best of both worlds, for better or for worse.
Definitely. Now, I'm going to go on to the rest of, like, you know, how leading on to the next part. But, like, before I continue here, are there any of the things I missed here or any of the things that you feel academics kind of overlook when it comes to the gay subtext of the film?
Oof. Freddy.
Oh, that's a good one. In what way, Freddy? I know a lot of the dialogue and the way
dialogue. Yeah, I mean,
he wants to be inside this butt.
Yeah, which weird. No, I think Freddy as a villain, which we love a queer-coded villain.
Yeah.
Don't love it when they're child murderers, but I love a queer-coded villain. Yeah, his dialogue, and I think making the connection or the argument that at this point, Freddy Krueger was, like, an extension of Jesse's, like, subconscious, or, like, an extension of him at this point, worked, because then you get, like, the Fruity Krueger, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, Freddy Bear. Yeah.
Stop it! You get Fruity Krueger, who is very much, like, pretty much flirting with him, where he's like, you got the body, I got the brains.
He's, like, and touching he's, like, up on
touching
him.
Touching him with his weird glove. It's
not in a menacing way, really, either. More like
it's erotic. Well, yeah. And I don't know if you saw this in your research, but that scene where he does that, initially, he was supposed to stick his knife fingers in his mouth.
Yep, I remember that.
And I was just like, come on. Come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Come on.
I think that was one of the ones I looked at the production. They were like, we're going a little too far with this. We gotta hold on a second.
It's supposed to be subtext. Yeah. That's not text.
That's on the nose and on the tongue. And,
in the mouth and down the throat.
And all the things. Yeah. It's funny. Okay, so see, there you go. There's a little bit of breakdown of really before we get into further discussion what makes this film pretty gay. But Mark Patton, after all of this, he actually wrote a journal in the voice of Jesse dealing with Jesse's homosexuality after the events of Freddy's Revenge, which you can actually read online right now.
Oh, so the actor canonically makes Jesse gay?
Yes, he does.
Love that.
He totally does.
Nobody's
stopping him. Nobody. I have the link. I'll send it to you.
Please do. Yep. I love that.
Yep. So, however, while that concludes Jesse's story in the films...
There's one thing I did want to point out.
Oh, yeah.
The PE teacher.
Oh, shit. That's right.
The fucking PE teacher. Okay, so I know we're not doing, like, a play-by-play. We're not doing a synopsis, necessarily.
Please, break this down for us.
In this gay... This S&M gay bar, whatever you want to call it,
Small town sluts butt.
Love that. Yes. Somehow, some way, Jesse wanders out of his house without his shoes on, in his pajamas, slutting it up.
Mm-hmm.
he's not really. I'm just saying that. But he wanders into this gay bar.
Yeah.
And he somehow manages to get a drink. Again, teenage kid in his pajamas at the small town slut spot.
Very clearly a teenager, too. He's looking the part.
He's twinktastic in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Twinktastic,
that's right.
Yeah.
You put a twinkle in my eye, Jesse.
Oh, we're going to hell. And then the PE teacher shows up wearing what I can only call a vest with, like, a leather vest.
Yeah. It's a little chappy.
It's a little chappy. Just a touch. this is going to get playfully homophobic. Bear with me. So the PE teacher takes Jesse back to school. He doesn't take him home. Mm-hmm. This is after catching Jesse pouring a beer into a glass, a short glass, which I was, what are you doing, guy?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
This is how you drink beer, right? I'm a man.
I am a man. Fucking A. Anyway.
That could be a teenager thing, though, too. That's both.
I'm pretty sure it's a teenager thing in this case. I'm gonna say it's a teenager thing.
Yes.
So, the PE teacher catches him doing this and instead doesn't take him home, doesn't say, hey, wear your shoes, fucking kid. Mm-hmm. He instead takes him to school and says, hey, teenage kid, you're gonna run laps. In the auditorium, I'm going to stand here in what I can only say is a barely appropriate leather vest.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely not something I think you would have part of the school standard of dress code.
No, it's not part of the dress code.
No.
And then he's just like, okay, hit the showers. And like, you're going to make a kid who showed up at a bar with no shoes on shower. And then what? What are you going to do then? Like, I'm like, what?
What's the game plan here?
What's the game plan? I think you like teenage kids.
Yeah.
This. This PE teacher already had it out for him.
He definitely targeted this boy. Like, throughout the entire... Yeah. Since the beginning of the movie, really.
Yeah. So, it was very interesting.
Well, that and, like, there are already rumors about the teacher in
Yeah,
the
about
school.
Him going... Yeah, he's like, some queer S&M bar. Yeah. Queer in the derogatory, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so very weird scene. But then also the teammate or the PE teacher gets it because he gets a bunch of balls thrown at him, and I mean that in the very literal sense, like just flying balls, balls everywhere,
a bunch of balls to the face, huh?
Balls to the face.
Subtext, Alex.
Balls.
This movie's so gay.
So many balls.
Yeah.
Big balls, small balls.
And a spanking, you know, just the whole shebang.
Yeah, and then he gets supernaturally dragged into the showers where the teenage boy is showering and is supernaturally tied up, spread yes. eagle, in the showers and starts getting spanked supernaturally.
It is.
With a towel on the ass.
And guys, this is...
I'm not making this up.
She's not making this up. This is not a short scene. this is not... You want to talk about the camera lingering and, like, the whole framing of this? Like,
so many asses.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like, subtext, Alex. It's subtext. Yeah.
You can't... No, you can't.
Yeah, David Cheskin got a lot of balls, too. Trying to deny this shit.
No,
anyways.
No.
And fucking shoulder, Jack Shoulder. Oh, Mark Patton, you hero.
Yeah, truly.
But, of course, while this does conclude Jesse's story in the films, Freddy still had a lot more to say. But New Line was actually kind of skittish on whether they wanted to continue pursuing the franchise going forward. That is, until original series creator Wes Craven came back into the picture. But we'll talk about that when we talk about one of the most celebrated installments in this franchise, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
My personal favorite.
Oh, it's a great one. Sometime in the future, obviously. For now, let's start talking a little bit more about this very, very bold sequel.
As if we haven't spoken about it enough.
I know, right? We've talked about the message of the film. So, overall, though, how do you feel about the movie, A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge?
It was ass. No pun intended.
It wasn't a great movie, to be honest with you.
No, it wasn't great. Was it super gay and very campy? And by that alone, was it an enjoyable watch? Yes.
Yeah, it's distinctive, I would say.
It was a dumpster fire, but a fun dumpster fire.
Yeah.
It was a fun dumpster fire. It was a slow motion train wreck that I could not look away from.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little slow in parts, and there were, I think, maybe 4 characters that didn't need to be in the story at all.
Which characters?
The mom, the dad, the sister, one of the friends.
Honestly, you're right. The most forgettable fucking characters in the movie.
Well, because, like, they have this whole setup with the dad and the mom where you're just...
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And I kept thinking that it was going to pay off in, like, a satisfying death of the father, who was just pretty much an abusive twat the entire movie.
My son's not gay.
Yeah, pretty much. He all but said, like, I won't be raising no queers in this house. And
I just clean the room? Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. God. And he... Just an awful, awful father figure. Like, the mom's nice. The mom is just... The mom, dead ass, was just like, I think we should put our son in therapy. I think he's really struggling. I'm worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad is just like, no son of mine will be in therapy. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Oh, the 80s.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
It was insane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is a dumb movie.
It's a dumb movie.
It's a really dumb.
It's dumb.
It's dumb, but it is kind of the definition also of dumb fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right. The pacing actually is kind of shitty. I think it's actually not very well paced at all. it has a lot of lulls and a lot of, like, Jesse's going through this and montage time and Jesse's going through this.
It just drags. Like, I feel like, I don't even know how long the movie was. I wasn't in control of the screen, so I couldn't see how long.
No, it's like a short movie.
It did not feel like it.
No, definitely
did. It felt like a 2-hour movie.
Yeah. But you know what, to me, though, when it hits, it actually hits really fun. Like, it's very distinct in a lot of its kills and a lot of its presentation of Freddy in general, I think. is a lot less quippy and a lot more menacing in this one, which I think is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have a bad look to it either, despite being cheap sometimes. They definitely tried. But
there was an effort.
There was absolutely an effort. I think, honestly, the script wasn't there. Like, they did, they played a little too much on the trope stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like it would be a forgettable sequel if Mark Patton didn't fucking own this role. Like, that would be it. Like, it would be a forgettable last sequel if the whole Mark Patton subtext behind the film wasn't prevalent.
I agree.
Yeah.
Or even the, I'm curious what it would have looked like with, like, the, I guess the even more subtext-y plot.
Yeah, the original script.
Yeah, the original
with
script.
With less of, like, the, you know, overtones being overtly part of the overall production.
This movie is 87 minutes long.
It's so short.
It is less than an hour and a half long.
It feels like 2 hours.
What the fuck?
I know.
The ever-loving fuck?
Because we only talked about a handful of moments. There's whole, like, setups between that really are kind of useless.
What the shit? No, there's a whole pool party where we're just like, what's gonna happen? What's going on? What's happening?
Mm-hmm.
And fucking Freddy fucking Krueger somehow is attacking a whole small town.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow they conveniently forget it. Conveniently, everyone's just like, oh.
Well, this movie...
Weird how everyone just died at that pool party.
Yeah, yeah. A whole generation of high schoolers just gone. Well, actually, I do like that scene because you never really get to see Freddy that brutal in any of the installments. Like, he's a manipulator. He, like, does fantasy to kill his people, but, like, he went full-on
slasher. But it's always a dream.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always in a dream. That wasn't. So
no.
What the fuck was that?
I thought it was kind of cool, actually, because he actually got to be like, oh, these are my fucking knife hands and you're all fucking dead. But people, they were all dumb, too.
In the lore, in the grand scheme of the lore?
Oh, no, it's garbage.
It makes no sense.
Definitely.
Because he can only kill you in a dream.
But this was so fun.
It wasn't fun, yes. Does it make a lick of sense? No.
I mean, yeah, I don't care, though. Like, it's just to be like,
fine.
Okay, like, seeing some guy try to talk Freddy, like, hey, dude, come on, man, like, take it easy, like, whatever, Freddy's just like, are you fucking kidding me?
I'm
just
Freddy fucking Krueger.
And just fucking kills the shit out of him. Like, that is great.
It was fine.
That is great to me. But, I mean, overall, like, that's to me, it's like a little, like, you don't get to see Freddy have that high a body count usually, which I think makes it a little distinct in that front. And it also kind of saves the third act, because, honestly, he's kind of...
It saved the third act. Well, okay. I would... Because it begins the third act.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Top of the third act.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because it saves it. I agree, because...
It sets it higher, yeah.
In my opinion, it sets, like, a little bit too high of a bar for the third act, because the rest of it, I think, is kind of boring.
True, but I also think it would be less memorable without the pool massacre.
I agree.
Yeah, it would still be the same third act without a bunch of teenagers dumbly getting killed in a fucking 80s-ass pool party.
What an 80s pool party.
Yeah, super 80s-ass pool party. That to me is kind of great. And then again, like, the other madness of the film, but also, there's a lot of downtime.
Yeah. There's like, you get up there and clean your room, mister. Like, what?
My son's not going to therapy. Jesus, the character's fucking horrible.
Yeah, and then he a bird, like, swan dives and bursts into flames.
That's right.
Oh. All the while, like, this poor kid is, like, sweating, like, a third of his body weight every night.
Oh, yeah, nonstop.
And in the morning, he's just like, Dad, I think the AC's broken. He's like, there's nothing wrong with the AC. Like, what the fuck?
Okay. And they're so used to his screams, too. Wouldn't there a scene, like, when he doesn't scream, they're like, oh, I wonder what's happening to Jesse.
Yeah, there is a scene where he's just like, you seem well-rested, Jesse. Like, it's just like, oh, it's because you didn't wake up to him screaming his head off?
And the whole, like, wait, people got killed in this house? You didn't tell me about that. Dad's like, well, you got a good fucking deal.
Yeah.
Freddy is definitely less quippy than in his first outing, and definitely less quippy than his later installments. But how do you feel about Freddy and England's performance in general for this film, and why is just Robert England so goddamn irreplaceable as this character?
Good question. I'm okay with the amount of England we get in this movie.
Yeah, it's brief, but it works.
It's brief, but it works. I think any more, and it just would have been to the detriment of Freddy Krueger as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the movie just kind of sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, again, it, like, the movie's just kind of eh. And I think Robert Englund, like, kind of, I don't want to say he saved it, but, I mean, him agreeing to come on definitely saved Freddy.
It did, and honestly, I can't imagine this movie, despite him not being quippy, despite him being a little more menacing, like, there's no way that stunt double's going to be able to fucking put his hand on Jesse's face and do the whole, like, that's an England.
Yeah.
Like, that's a thespian actor,
yes,
like, doing his fucking thing right there.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I don't remember all of England's, like, theatrical training, but
he's really, really well trained.
Yeah, he's, like, full body. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that's what makes him so irreplaceable, right?
Yes.
And I think someone who's been so invested in a singular character for as long as he has kind of is what makes him irreplaceable.
Yeah, exactly. And even into the second installment.
Yeah.
Like, there really is, well, like,
I mean, like, like, Michael Myers.
Yeah.
For example. He has been played by so many different people.
That's
to the
true.
Point that you can have a favorite Michael Myers mask, actor, or combination therein.
Or just a walk.
Just a walk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you can identify the actor by said walk. You know what I mean?
You're like, Tony Durand, you fucked up, sir.
Right. Nick Castle, you know? Like, so I think that the difference here between your England, you know, and other horror icons is that he positioned himself to be irreplaceable as, like, I can't imagine anyone else playing Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, even Jackie Earle Haley was, like, the closest anyone kind of got, and even then you're just like, oh, dude, it's just, like, imitation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different, but it's, like, too different, and you just, like, there's just no way. Like, England has just a line delivery that is fucking amazing. His facial structure is Freddy. A mask isn't going to be able to do any of that shit.
Yeah.
And just the way he interacts with other characters.
And you think about it, like, between Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, like, he's the only one who is consistently been played by the same person.
Yeah, exactly. And then, even then, the only one that would come close would be, like, Brad Dourif as Chucky. And he doesn't have to perform, really, with the body. He only has to do the voice and the inflections
and
even
then,
that.
Like, but Brad Dourif is a whole other, like, ballgame. I love Brad Dourif.
I mean, I agree.
He's fucking fantastic.
He's but such a great actor.
He's such a great actor, but he's also, like, a fantastic voice actor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just the way he's able to convey things with the, he's
but,
so good.
See, that's the level of talent that keeps them irreplaceable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So, are there any other comparably gay horror films to Freddy's Revenge, or does it just come out on top or solo, Alex, Miss Webster over here? What are some of the gayest horror films out there?
I'm so glad you asked. So, we have your Hellraisers. We have Jennifer's Body. We have...
Oh, Jennifer's Body.
Let the Right One In. May, which we've recently covered, is relatively, you know, fruity.
Yeah, questioning, definitely.
Sleepaway Camp.
Sleepaway Camp.
Which is a classic that we haven't covered yet.
Mm-hmm.
Wink, wink. What else is there? Let's see. Yeah.
I mean, all those are really good examples, and not often on the nose like this one.
Yeah.
They're actually got a little more subtle.
I mean, one of my personal favorite thrillers that's a little fruity, Rope by Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay, Rope, that's another one.
That it was during the, oh my god, the thing that banned everything. Hayes, like, Code, Jesus,
yes,
Christ.
Hayes
it was during the Hayes Code, so like, they subtext ruled the fucking day.
Yeah, that's,
during the
they had to get clever.
They had to get clever.
Yeah.
Like, this was before, like even married couples couldn't sleep in the same bed in film during the Hayes Code. Another film recommendation from yours truly, if you're interested in the Hayes Code and how it affected queerness in film, I must recommend a documentary called The Celluloid Closet.
Okay, all right.
It is a fantastic documentary that goes into this extensively and about how queerness was, like, totally celebrated in film and how it was a lot more widely... like, recognized. It was kind of like a don't ask, don't tell, recognized secret, open secret.
Yes, exactly.
And then once the Hayes Code happened, like, everything changed. And it took art back. Like, it held it back for decades.
Isn't it always interesting? Those figures always have the same beliefs. They're always just like, ah, you know what? Think of the children.
Yeah, exactly.
Excuses to repress people.
Definitely. Dipshits. It's one of my favorite documentaries. I need to rewatch it. I highly recommend it.
I'll totally watch it.
All Cheerleaders Die is another good one. The Hunger, one of my personal favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Which
we covered a season or two ago.
Fucking
A, we're doing this a little bit, all right? I'm like, which fucking February was that?
Seed of Chucky.
Oh, Seed of Chucky. That's a good one. That's a good point. Oh, shit. We haven't covered a Chucky this season.
But Seed of Chucky's the next one we're covering, dude.
Oh, shit, that's right.
Because the last one we covered was Bride of Chucky.
Yeah, Bride of Chucky was a whole season. Oh, my God. Sorry, guys. We skipped Chucky this year.
Or do we? Question mark. The Craft.
Oh, The Craft.
I'm looking at a list now. The Covenant's pretty gay. The Covenant's really homoerotic.
A lot of these are after Frey's Revenge, which is interesting.
Yes.
Like a really good amount.
There's also, I mean, there's some other ones that are more like, Sleepaway Camp came out in 83.
Well, actually, I'll bring one example here because you obviously have a lot more to say about this, but one very controversial thing for a movie that predates Frey's Revenge is called The Hitchhiker. That one is definitely...
I've seen it.
Oh, yes. That has a lot of actual subtle subtext in it.
Subtle subtext.
But people touched on that. You're like, wow, they're going through all that with like a man.
Yeah, see Thomas Howell's in it.
Yep.
He's great in it, too.
Oh, we gotta put that one on the list.
I would love to cover that.
I mean, it's kind of fun. It's kind of a precursor to this, but a lot more well done. So
I really liked it. So... Yes, would love to talk about. Yeah, I saw it at Camp Frida last year.
Mm.
Very enjoyable.
Okay.
Got to see it on a big screen.
And real 70s.
Yeah, very 70s.
Real 70s.
Yeah, Pony Boy's in it.
Oh, shit. Pony Boy. The Outsiders. What a good... If Coppola directed that one, that's insane to me.
Yeah.
Freddy Krueger wants your body.
Oh, no.
And it's a manifestation of something you're struggling with. What is Freddy trying to get out of you, and where does he start his killing spree?
How is this the fun question?
That is fun.
This seems like a psychological evaluation, where you're like, hey, Alex, spill your guts.
Hey, what are you struggling with? And by the way...
What are you... Yeah, what's your deep, like, seated issues that you need to, like, deal with?
Well, mine's pretty basic. I'm my big thing is struggling with, do I want to work like a regular job or do I want to be that guy that's like, I think Freddie would take over my body right when I am running ads and working for these various businesses and writing jokes and copy, and he would just fuck up my career. He would be like,
you think he's gonna fuck up your career
and kill my bosses? Who knows? He'll know where the addresses are, but I think he'll actually do like some really ridiculous ad spend where I'm like, Freddy, no,
okay.
Like on the inside.
Sure. Okay. What's something I'm struggling with?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than the usual,
bad sleep. Fucking, I don't know.
No, I'm sleeping great. I already have anxiety and depression, but everyone knew that.
Yeah.
What am I struggling with?
It could be a benign issue.
Yeah.
Or something small scale.
Yeah, I know. That's why you said something I'm struggling with. I'm like, what am I struggling with? Oh, you know what I am struggling with? You know what he's going to do? He is going to kill all the big gasoline executives.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm struggling with putting gas in my fucking car.
There you go. See? It's like $6.50 a gallon. God damn it.
I am befuddled, bewildered, disgusted, shaking, crying, throwing up as we speak. Mm-hmm. Gas prices are ridiculous. And I know everyone's talking about it because I know it's topical and whatever. But it's fucking bullshit.
I do feel like Freddy Krueger may be in Vladimir Putin's dreams right now. He's like,
I hope so. No, during a conversation yesterday, a friend who will remain unnamed, starts with an A, ends with Drian, was just like, I spent like $50 to fill my tank yesterday. I'm like, oh, boo, fucking who?
Oh, yeah, huh, Mr. fucking not having a goddamn Dodge Charger. Yeah.
Boo, fucking who? spent $90.
Oh my god. 90?
90. 90.
Oh hell. I spent 65 the other day and I was pissed. I was so mad. But 90 seems a lot worse.
Get fucked.
90 seems a lot worse.
Get fucked.
Yeah, see, okay, I can see where this Freddy would come out right now. Jesus. Jesus.
Yeah. So that's what I'm struggling with right now.
Alright. So what would you say is the kill of the film?
Grady.
Yeah.
Grady.
Okay.
Grady's that
was
my
pretty,
kill.
Pretty emotionally wrenching.
I just liked it. It was good. Mm-hmm. It was also just like, he's screaming, the other guy's screaming, everyone's screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
I would say the massacre, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I think the whole massacre to me was just one of those scenes that I just love Freddy to be like, ah! And then, I don't know. You don't get to see Freddy do it, so because it's so unique,
okay,
I'm putting the entire massacre as my kill of the film.
Very good.
All right, so, with that, what would you rate A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, out of 5 sweaty candle dances?
Oh, those sweaty phallic candles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give it a 2.5 for fun.
Okay, see? That was pretty close to it. I was going to give it a 2.25. Because I think it's honestly like a 1.5 movie. It's not that great.
It's not a great movie.
But I want to give it like...
It's ass.
Yeah.
Like, it is truly... It is ass.
Actually, you know what? 2.5. I'm with you. Because now I think about it, I got to give a whole point for Mark Patton. And him just...
Sure.
Just doing his journey, sticking it out, and then honestly becoming also a horror icon.
I don't think I could rate something this low for something that I genuinely had fun watching.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? Like, if I had to sit through something that I was miserable watching and, like, I just couldn't wait to be over, like,
yeah,
that would be, like, a 1.5 for me.
You're right.
I enjoyed watching this, regardless of the filmmaking, regardless of the pacing, regardless of the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mark Patton did his best.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the just not subtext.
Yeah.
I enjoyed myself.
You're right. You know what? I'm with you on that one. Now that you've convinced me there, 2.5, I think it's profound garbage. Important garbage.
Yes. All right. Very good. And on that note, noting that, you know, HIV and AIDS, everyone.
Yes.
Get tested. Know your status.
Mm-hmm.
Undetectable means untransmittable. Mm. And so that is... What is the name of this movie? Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge. Join us next week for...
What are we covering next week?
Oh, shit. What are we covering next week? I'm pulling it up right now.
I'm pulling it up, too. What month are we on right now?
Shit. Where'd it go?
Oh, shit. Hell yeah. Oh, I'm so... Can't wait for that
yes!
one.
Yes. Okay. So, join us next week for a fun little home invasion film.
Yeah, that...
A reverse home invasion film.
It's so fun.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's fun.
I've only heard great things about it.
Yeah.
I'm very excited. It'll be a delight. I hope you'll join us for it. In the meantime, thank you for writing this, Anthony. This was
appreciate
great.
It.
Normally, anytime there's anything like gay, everyone's just like, you write it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what this is.
I know. I just wanted to do this one for some
reason.
You're
the expert, and you know, you did a great job.
Thank you.
So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe wherever you are listening. And if you are listening on Spotify or iTunes, please leave a 5-star review. And if you are listening on iTunes, you can write us a review as well. And then if you want, we do also have a Patreon. You can support us on Patreon. We are at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. How many times can I say Patreon in the span of 30 seconds?
a lot of peace.
Yeah, this movie. and then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE, People's Podcast. And you can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler.
That's me.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. So that's it for this week. If the furnace is broken in your home, I think you should get it fixed. And if your home was previously owned by a child murderer, consider moving.
Yeah, that's true. Also, subtext.
subtext. And finally, one more time for the road. Gay!
See ya.
Bye.